the method.
Idea. Method became
unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
Without doubt. Do you call it unsound method?
I don't see any method at all.
Hello and welcome to a slightly different episode of Unsound Methods. This is a bonus episode to run in tandem with episode 12, in which we spoke to Noemi Lefebvre and Emma McBride prior to the event, which this episode has the audio.
The event was part of the Beyond Words Festival at the Institut Français that ran from the 14th to the 21st of May this year and brought together French language writers recently translated into English, English language writers who have a special connection with France, and European writers appearing in translation. We'd like to give special thanks to Axel Loxborough, Nikki Pressa, Cécile Menon, Sophie Lewis and Lucy Campos for helping to arrange the event and also our interview.
This event took place on the 17th of May 2018 at the Institut Français in London, and they have provided this audio. Thanks for listening.
So good evening. Good evening and welcome to the French Institute. Bonsoir et bienvenue à l'Institut Français. My name is Lucy Campos and I run the French book office here. And we are the team with Julie, Natacha and Louise behind this slightly mad and very exciting festival called the Beyond Words Festival, which started on Monday and is continuing till next Monday. The point of the festival is to bring to London conversations between writers recently translated from French into the English language and from English into French, and of course other languages allowed, but French is most interesting to us because our audiences here at the Institut Français are always so mixed, speak both one of those two languages, sometimes both, sometimes more. And it's very exciting for us to be able to put together these conversations in several languages across the world of translation and in every direction that translation can go in. We're very excited to have been able to put together this event here tonight. It's going to take place in two parts. So the first part is going to be a conversation between Emma McBride, who is sitting to the right, and Noemi Lefebvre. Thank you very much for joining us here. Emma has come from not very far, but to us, she is a very, and she is well known here, but in France, her second book has just been published. So she is the author of A Girl is a Half-Formed Thing, which won many prizes, including the Bailey's Women's Prize for Fiction, an Irish Novel of the Year a few years ago. Her latest novel is The Lesser Bohemians, and this has just been published in French by Boucher Chastel. A Girl is a Half-Formed Thing is also published by Boucher Chastel in France. Beside her is Noemi Lefebvre. Noemi Lefebvre is a familiar name for us in Paris, and we're very pleased to have you here again. Noemi, you were here last year already for your translation of L'Autoportrait Bleu, translated by Les Fugitives as Blue Self-Portrait, and translated by Sophie Lewis, who is sitting at the end and who will be chairing this conversation. Beside Noemi is Axel Oxborough, who is going to be Noemi's voice in English tonight when she needs it. There are other voices here tonight, and the idea behind this evening was to be able to have this exciting conversation between two writers we're very interested in, but also to talk a little bit more about French publishing in its more collective aspect, and in about a particular publishing list, which is part of Gallimard, but called Les Éditions Verticales. So the second part of the evening is going to be a series of readings by writers from the Éditions Verticales. And we have sitting in the room Pierre Sange, who will be reading, and Hélène Frédéric, who's hiding at the back, but who will be reading as well, and Jeanne Guillon, who will say a few words about the Éditions Verticales and what something like Noemi's book fits into the sort of larger context of the project behind an edited list. This will be run by Emmanuel Bougeau, who will take over for the second part of the evening. So welcome to all. Thank you very much for coming. And it's Sophie's turn.
Thank you, Lucy. Is this on? Yes. Okay. Let me know if you can't hear me at any point. I'm thrilled to be here. These two writers mean a lot to me, and I think they mean a lot to quite a lot of people. We won't assume you've read their books. I will just describe in hopeless outline, ridiculously tiny sketch, something of the books that we'll talk about, and then we'll have very brief readings, one from each one. One from one by Ima and one from one by Noemi, so you can get a sense of style, mainly. And then we'll go into a bit of a conversation. So, how can I put it? Noemi, Cécile, the publisher at Les Fugitives, told me to read your book. It's about Blue Self-Portrait, this one, is about a woman coming back from Berlin to Paris, having suffered and endured and put herself through and enjoyed and messed up a relationship and going over and over in her head about why it went wrong, blaming herself and teasing herself and thinking about her own crazy attitude to life and how other people have pigeonholed her and it flows. There's the ands are deliberate. It doesn't stop and it's hilarious. So this is Blue Self-Portrait. And Ima, well, we heard she's written two books. I'm going to just display here, or publish two books rather than written two. We have A Girl is a Half-Formed Thing. Again, a woman, well, a girl becoming a woman and dealing with some pretty tough family situations on the way, to put it very mildly, dealing with illness and death and definitely dealing with sex and what it means to be becoming a woman and to have borders on one's body and to discover where they should lie. And this about, well, this one set in Camden largely, and about trying to be an actor and also about sex and where those borders should lie, with a different relationship at the heart of it. So the two readings we'll have, I think, Noemi, let's go first. This is a section from the middle, or sort of nearish to the middle, of L'Autoportrait Bleu. Yes, Noemi will read first, and then I'll read in English.
Elle comprenait, constatait le pianiste aux yeux de la fille. La formation des consciences musicales n'est rien pour personne, mais pour cette fille, si, se dit le pianiste en regardant ses yeux. La fille qui n'avait de la jeunesse et de la musique, des ravages de la musique sur la jeunesse et de ceux de la jeunesse sur la musique, aucune connaissance historique, mais qui savait, comment savait-elle? Les yeux de la fille, maintenant, quoi faire devant eux? Il voulait ne pas avoir abordé le sujet Heydrich, voudrait ne pas avoir parlé du père ni du fils, se dit qu'il aurait dû renoncer à colporter ce 20 janvier 1942 de fille en fille, mais à chaque fois se prend à reparler de ce jour-là, l'évocation du 20 janvier 1942, et pour le pianiste la condition préalable à toute relation, mais son immanquable fin. Il le sait par expérience. Tout de même, à chaque fois brandit la date et à chaque fois détruit la relation. Les filles en bonne santé l'une après l'autre fuyant et les filles fragiles tombant, soit l'un soit l'autre, mais elle non, voit le pianiste. La fuite comme la chute, il en a vu mille variantes chez elle, non. Cette fille-là qui croise les jambes et décroise les Heydrich père et fils n'en viennent pas à bout. Mais rapprochant étant la fille du pianiste, chaque mot sorti de la bouche du pianiste à propos des Heydrich aurait tout aussi bien pu sortir de la bouche de la fille. Si aisément que le pianiste voudrait l'embrasser et la coucher et la serrer contre lui jusqu'à disparition des différences essentielles du 20 janvier 1942, j'aurais dû m'en souvenir en apercevant le Wannsee, puis en le voyant disparaître d'un coup d'aile. Je ne sais pas comment j'ai pu apercevoir cette eau et ne pas penser d'abord sinon au père, du moins au fils. Je me le suis bien dit, mais trop tard. L'erreur, encore une fois, irréparable. La spontanéité de ma non-pensée sur le fils Heydrich m'a traversée comme une baïonnette de celles qui font regretter la guerre ou va-t-en guerre. J'ai eu encore une fois honte trop tard, comme toujours la honte me concernant. Une honte trop tard avec cet effet dévastateur sur mon état physique et moral en même temps que physique, terriblement moral et trop tard comme toujours la morale me concernant. La spontanéité morale s'apprend dès le plus jeune âge. Un raté de mon éducation, je me suis dit. Me voilà reparti à me lamenter sur mon éducation, une lamentation qui ne sert à rien qu'à justifier une absence de spontanéité morale. Que les deux Heydrich, le nazi ami de Göring et le nazi compositeur et directeur de conservatoire, n'aient aucune spontanéité morale, ça, voilà ce qui a autorisé la conférence de Wannsee. Que cette éducation ait été catastrophique pour le développement personnel de Heydrich et pour l'humanité, voilà qui a été prouvé par la conférence de Wannsee. Et même si Heydrich avait prononcé une parole, inutile d'attendre une seule parole de Heydrich. J'ai beau tendre l'oreille, a dit le pianiste, je n'ai jamais entendu ce seul mot, Entschuldigung.
She did understand, the pianist saw in the girl's eyes. The training of musical consciences means nothing to anyone. But for this girl it does, the pianist thought, observing her eyes. This girl who of youth and musicianship, of the ravages of music upon youth, and of those of youth upon music, had no historical knowledge, but who knew? How could she know? The girl's eyes now, where to put himself in their light? He wished he'd not brought up the Heydrichs, wished he'd spoken neither of father nor son, thought he should have given up peddling his 20th of January 1942 from one girl to the next. But each time he catches himself banging on about that day, for the pianist, discussion of 20th of January 1942 is the prior condition for any relationship. But its inevitable end, he knows from experience, still each time whips out his pet date and each time destroys the relationship. Girls in good health fleeing one after the other, or delicate girls dropping like ninepins, one or the other. But this one not fleeing or dropping, the pianist sees. Flights and drops he's seen 1,000 variants, but not with her. This girl, who crosses and uncrosses her legs, the Heydrich's father and son don't finish her off. Rather, they bring the girl and the pianist so close together. Each word on the Heydrich's from the pianist's mouth could equally have come from the girl's mouth, so naturally that the pianist would like to kiss and lay her down and hold her tight against him until all fundamental differences have been effaced. I should have remembered about the 20th of January 1942, when I caught sight of the Wannsee, then saw it disappear again in the space of a heartbeat. I don't know how I could see that water and not think first, if not of the father, at least of the son. I did think of them, but too late. The mistake once again irreparable. The spontaneity of my non-thinking about Heydrich the Younger pierced me like a dagger thrust. The kind that makes warmongers regret war. Once again, I was ashamed too late, as is always the case with me, and shame, a belated shame with this devastating effect on my physical condition, and on that of my morale, as well as my physique, so terribly moral, and much too belated as ever when it comes to me and morality. Moral spontaneity should be learned as young as possible. A flaw in my education, I thought. Here I go again, complaining about my education, a complaint that's good for nothing, but to justify a lack of moral spontaneity, that the two Heydrichs, the Nazi friend of Göring, and the Nazi composer and conservatorium director should have zero moral spontaneity. That is what permitted the Wannsee conference. That this education was catastrophic for Heydrich's personal development and for humanity, that's what the Wannsee conference proved. And even if Heydrich had said something, pointless to expect a single word from Heydrich, however, I've strained to hear it, the pianist said, I've never heard that one word, Entschuldigung. Thank you. So they're in the deep end, but the deep end's the only place to be. Ime, I think you're going to read from The Lesser Bohemians.
I am, yes. I just thought I'd read some sex. So, since that is such a major feature of the book, all you need to know is an 18-year-old Irish girl has come to London to go to drama school and lose her virginity. And tonight she has met the man who she's going to make sure does it. He doesn't know that yet, though. In the metal clang night, talking films, we walk. Fish my hand near his, but he only smokes. Maybe he's a murderer. Fuck's sake, he's a fuck, and look at him, he's probably done this lots. But oh, my body opts out and in, flesh scraping fear against the dew of my brain. So slice my fingertips on every railing to keep by him up the Camden Road. See, not far, he says, brushing round the hedge, just along number 5, broken gate. God, this is your house, I gasp, floors high and white. Not mine, he laughs, where I rent a bedsit, up there, first floor. Have you lived here long? He mulls his keys. 10 years, give or take. So, since I was 7 or 8. Jesus, don't tell me you're as young as that. Why? He shakes his head. Never mind. Then thumbs his fag end back down the crack, wild path. No hall lights. Sorry, follow me. I follow up the stairs. Silver key. Let me turn on the light first. Just wait there. So I lull in a dark ocean of motley air as the traffic beyond here calms. Motorbike and lorry alike hold all I know about tonight. To do and then to be. Click and glow and it's a mess, but you might as well come in, he says. Choose him, choose this and now. Higher but smaller than... Jesus, what a state! Hence the suggestion of your place first. Him down at the fake fire, striking the gas. I wasn't expecting to bring anyone home. Sink in the corner, bay window jammed with desk, books going topple, I pick by old letters, ash saucers, scripts, half-filled mugs. Give me your coat, his single bed. Dumped on the armchair where I could have myself, but politeness is polite. I'll just clear these plates. Goodbye, dried mince. May the kissing go better for the pinter beneath it, will it? Orange peel and Valenclan. What might have been a plaster on Howard Brenton? Stop it, stop it. So, let love in. What? Do you like Nick Cave? I don't know, I say. Well, let's find out. Dumb devil's tossed on his long coat slung, and I see it then, quiet, tense in his mouth, how now's getting past time for more. Come here. But the nerves make a faff of my own. Actually, it's not that bad a room. How much is it a month? About 200. Well, that's pretty good, but the way you treat your books, bollocks to the books, he says, touching my face. It is the first time we have, and I go quick to the thrill, pleasure, dread. Terrible mouth, though, keeps on saying, is it annoying always having to bend to kiss unless she's as tall as you, which I'm obviously not, and he is so tall he must bend a lot. But he does, saying, nope, then kissing me. Fright eye he holds to the make of his lip, turning into my own turn until I kiss back. I think he is smiling, but means it the same. Kisses to bit breaths and touch of his tongue, making fast me. Does he notice? Doesn't say, or doesn't care. Just amuses his mouth and flips all my blood over. So here's how grown men kiss, and this one knows how. I know it's a fine kiss, but gird for what follows is in the depths of his curtain some dying fly sings. Hear it go against the glass and put your bag down, he says. Stripping it, tossing it, kissing again, gone fuck to forbearance, mouth on my neck, then deep with mine, open, working out, something else like under his worn shirt, his whole body is, and his skin is so live and likes being touched. Even my barest morsel of palm on his stomach, my skin shifting too, if not quite there, scares to his search for a zip on my dress. There isn't one either. He gets that quick. Instead, ups the dress, up my thighs, past my tights, arms up, he says, pulling it off, and I'm getting bare. Bra. Oh, my old bra, the red marks it makes, and oh God, I am blood thud at the hand on my breast. Beg off the moment he might want a look. And does his shirt, though. Thanks, reprieve. Shrugs it off and swings far with kissing. Lovely. But getting precise with his hands. My grey strap, simple, tugged down. Then where he slides one of mine. So I, Jesus, I eyes wide. This isn't a game. This is already well underway. And I'd like to look at his body, but he doesn't know that. And I am miles too shy to ask. For now, the kissing's more biting. Now it's show me your breasts and the bra's off. Like, voila. He steps back. I fold up. Too late for modesty, he laughs, yanking my wrist. I can't, though. Just clench in. He tries again. I double over. Hey, is something wrong? I don't reply. Are you sick? Shake my head. Have I hurt you somehow? No, I... Eyes pricking wet. His voice turning anxious. What's just happened? What's wrong? And I know I must any minute now say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm shy.
I think I had an order of questions. They've gone out the window. There's only two halves of one question that I want to ask to both of you. And it is, what is a girl? We have a girl in each of these books here, and or in fact in all of them. What is this girl thing that's kind of nearly adult or trying to be adult, and what's going on? And relatedly, what is with all the apologizing? Why are we in all these girls apologizing? So whoever feels like shouting first. Noémie.
Je vais tout de suite commencer en français. J'ai été très frappée en lisant l'autre livre d'Emma en français par une culture commune que nous avons, qui est la culture catholique.
I was very struck when I read Emma's other book by the culture that we share, that is a Catholic culture.
Qui me semble être d'abord une culture de l'obéissance et de la honte associée à la transgression obligatoire.
Which is about obedience and which is associated at the same time with transgression.
Et qui est transgression est obligatoire dans le sens où ça fait partie de la culture elle-même.
And this transgression is obligatory because it is part and parcel of this culture itself.
Alors, je ne sais pas si c'est une explication sociologique à l'écriture, mais c'est au moins un point de départ pour essayer de comprendre une forme de schizophrénie.
I don't know if it's got a sociological element to it, but I think it's a starting point to try and analyze a sort of schizophrenia,
qui est celle d'une fille qui écrit, donc qui se saisit de cette question de la phrase et du sens depuis un endroit où se saisir de quelque chose est plutôt malvenu quand on est une fille.
And that also has incidences on the writing, as the girl seizes sentences and meanings in a way that seizing is seen as negative and bad.
Depuis l'autoportrait bleu, j'ai changé ma façon d'écrire pour essayer de dépasser un peu autrement cette question. Et parce que, en fait, en écrivant ce livre-là, je me suis rendu compte que je donnais en fait toute la puissance intellectuelle et créative au pianiste.
And so since Blue Stray Self-Portrait, I have changed slightly my writing style because I wanted to deal differently with the intellectual importance that I gave to the pianist.
Et à l'époque, je me souviens que j'avais joué avec cette manière de faire en poussant au maximum la caricature de l'homme qui sait, qui a la bonne position morale, qui a la bonne posture, et qui est tellement parfait qu'il en devient souvent ridicule.
And I played with this particular caricature of the pianist, this man who is almost so perfect that he becomes ridiculous.
Tandis que la fille a tout pensé trop tard, elle est apparemment toujours dans l'affect, mais c'est quand même elle qui écrit le livre.
Whereas the girl lives in the affect, in everything that affects her, and she's still the one who's writing the book at the end of the day.
Et c'est aussi dans sa tête qu'on peut trouver les germes de connaissances historiques, musicologiques, mais aussi de l'histoire politique, qui sont vraiment restituées de manière complexe, tandis que pour le pianiste, ce sont presque des caricatures de posture.
In her head, of course, we see the germs of historical, musicological, political elements and knowledge, whereas those, when expressed by the man, seem almost caricatural.
Et en lisant Emma traduit en français, je pense que ça doit être encore bien mieux en anglais. Et en écoutant aussi, avec ce que je peux comprendre, la lecture, j'entends aussi dans cette écriture quelque chose qui dit le half-formed thing, c'est quelque chose qui est plus formé que la chose vraiment formée.
And through reading Emma's book in French and listening to what I could understand of what was read tonight, I see that this half-formed thing is almost more form than the real thing.
Je finirai juste là-dessus en disant que the half-formed, c'est depuis l'écriture que propose Emma, c'est l'accomplissement le plus le plus évident et le plus facilement posé comme une réalité, tandis que peut-être pour des écrivains importants qui peuvent être aussi des références super importantes pour l'Irlande comme Beckett et Joyce, c'est comme s'il fallait qu'ils se départissent d'eux-mêmes, qu'ils enlèvent quelque chose de leur propre pouvoir pour voir le half-formed comme une forme accomplie.
And from what I take of Emma's writing, accomplishment is almost more obvious as form of reality, and it seems almost that more important writers such as Beckett and Joyce should almost remove something from themselves in order to achieve that reality.
C'est une hypothèse.
But that's just a hypothesis.
What do you think?
Well, for me, the idea of the girl is, you know, obviously a girl is a half-formed thing. I remember when it was first published, meeting occasionally irate women who would say, "What do you mean a girl is a half-formed thing?" And I'm having to say, a woman is not a half-formed thing, but a girl is a half-formed thing. And the idea of thing, of course, being important in that sentence too, but that that she's in the process of becoming. And so, you know, the first book, it begins when she's a child, when she's a baby, and goes through to really to the age that Les Bohemians starts off at. And for me, that's a very interesting moment in a woman's life, because it's the moment when she is beginning to make the world for herself, when she comes out from under the thumb of parental control, and it's, there's such a weight placed upon her and upon her appearance and how she behaves in the world. And it's a moment of deciding how complicit she will be in the culture that will shame her all her life.
That will shame her.
Yeah. And okay. I think the idea of shame is important. And certainly I felt in Blue Self-Portrait, the idea of that crushing sense of shame was something that I really, you know, as a writer understood, as a woman understood, that this was such a powerful influence and such a destructive element of life that is very particular, I mean, certainly to women from Catholic background, but not exclusively by any means.
So, hence all the apologies in advance of the shame.
The expectation is always that you will apologize for not being everything that you should be, isn't it? And that's the part of, you know, that's the great thing about being 40, is that you realize all of that is bullshit, but you don't realize that when you're 18.
So in the midst of sex, you're going to say sorry, and yes, all of this.
Well, you know, yeah. I think
no, yes. I'm not criticizing. I just I agree.
Personally, I never say sorry during sex, but
good to know. I don't know where to go from there. It's become central. I wanted to ask about, I guess reputation kind of follows from there. It seems reputation is really important, and it's not just your sense of shame, but how you think other people think about you, or how a character in a book feels that other people are shaping them. It seems that the straitjacket of how other people are thinking about your central character matters a lot, and the central character is either a little crushed by that or pushing it away. Does this make sense?
Yeah. I think for me, in both books, it's very different. In The Girl as a Half-Form Thing, that's very particularly the case, because she grows up in this deeply conservative religious society, and language itself fails her, because the language that is available to her is a language that can only condemn her and shame her and criticize her. There is no way for her to think about her experiences that won't result in a negative attitude towards herself. And there's no way out of that for her, and she struggles against it, but there's no way out. Whereas in the second book, she runs out into a whole different world, into a world that doesn't really care what she does.
A freer place to be. She had to run away, get to another place.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people experience that. Yeah. But, you know, which was also why the idea of place was very important in the second book, that, you know, I wanted to recreate the idea of what it is to be young and to leave one place to come to another, to a big place. And for me, obviously, it's very particularly London and in that time. But I think anyone who's ever left small town anywhere to go to big city somewhere understands that. And the relief of anonymity, the shedding of everything that you have been before.
Noemi, does this make sense also for you? And I also wanted to ask particularly about the mother-in-law's perception of the girl in blue self-portrait, and how she put her down as nonchalante and désinvolte, and yeah, basically gave her sense of herself.
Le lien entre la désinvolture de la fille dans le livre et le changement d'endroit, il est très important. C'est ce qui, même si c'est un voyage très court, c'est 8 jours dans un autre pays. C'est quand on change d'endroit qu'on peut mieux voir qui on peut devenir, qui on n'en est plus, ou qui on a été et qui est perdure. Et voilà, c'est un jeu de miroir aussi que renvoient les villes.
So the link with not caring and the change of place are, I believe, seminal, in the sense that it's only an 8-day trip, but it's only enough that this change of place is a way to better see who one might become, who one no longer is, who one was.
Après, c'est un jeu aussi. Je pense que dans ce livre-là, en tout cas, tout ce qui est de l'ordre de l'analyse de soi, c'est une redite, en fait. C'est tellement construit, c'est tellement conscient que c'est pour jouer. C'est un jeu de se renvoyer à soi-même cette image-là. Ça devient un jeu. Je pense que contrairement à la fille qui est dans le livre d'Aima, qui n'a pas assez de mots, la fille de l'autoportrait bleu, elle en a beaucoup trop.
This self-analysis is really a game. It's too constructed to be anything other than a game. And that makes it very, very different from the girl in Emma's book, because that girl has too few words, whereas the girl in Blue Self-Portrait has way too many.
Yeah. I want to ask a question I think other people would like me to ask. You mentioned Joyce and Beckett. Do you feel writing that these, that there are not necessarily these two, but that there are big writers who have, who you acknowledge as antecedents, or do you not think about this?
Si, pour l'autoportrait bleu, c'est, c'est d'autant plus vrai qu'il y a un écrivain derrière, c'est que quand j'étais à Berlin, j'étais en train de lire Maîtres anciens de Thomas Bernhard. Et donc, tout mon voyage à Berlin, il était rempli de phrases bernardiennes qui ont collé la réalité tout de suite. Donc, en fait, j'ai beaucoup triché. Ce livre, c'est un fake. C'est, j'ai fait simplement, j'ai laissé aller ma pensée dans cette, ce souvenir immédiat, puisque je l'ai écrit très vite après.
When I wrote Blue Self-Portrait, yes, there was somebody. When I was in Berlin, I was reading Ancient Masters by Bernhard, and therefore, throughout my time there, I had lots of Bernhardian quotes in my head, and therefore, I wrote the book soon after that. So, in a way, I could say the book is almost a fake. It's very filled with those references.
Sinon, je peux pas dire non plus que j'essaie de. Enfin, il y a des écrivains qui m'intéressent, mais je peux pas dire que je me situe dans une trajectoire ou que j'essaie de faire entrer mon écriture dans un courant. Non.
But there are authors that really interest me, but I can't really say that I force my writing into a specific current. No.
Emma, what would you say about writers behind you?
Yeah, I have to say the word Joyce, which I really hate having to say, but yes. Joyce, of course, the monster, and but it, you know, again, sort of as Noemi said, I feel as though, I mean, when it came to write A Girl is a Half-Formed Thing, Joyce was, and reading Ulysses was hugely important for me because it was the moment I understood the novel could be anything. If you could make it, if you could write it, then the novel could be whatever you wanted, and you were free. And so that was a huge revelation for me. I hadn't really understood that before. And so his importance to me was really as that of gatekeeper, that he opened the door and showed me the space. But once I went into that space, he stayed outside the door and I closed it behind me. So, you know, I felt as though I was given freedom, but I don't feel as though my writing is any attempt to imitate what he's doing or to continue what he's doing.
Looking over your shoulder.
No, I don't think so at all. In fact, I think I'm going in completely the opposite direction. I think Joyce, you know, it's placing man at the center of the universe, at the center of the solar system, practically. And I'm not interested in the grandiosity of that. Much as I admire it or I enjoy it, I think this is also particularly male attitude towards literature that doesn't particularly interest me as a writer. And what I'm really trying to do is go in the opposite direction. And I think the example of how we both handle cities in our novels is kind of illustrates that, in that, you know, Joyce famously said that Ulysses, if Dublin was wiped off the face of the earth, it could be rebuilt again exactly by following Ulysses to the letter. Whereas for me, if Camden was wiped off the face of the earth, which is more likely, and it was rebuilt again from the map in Lesser Bohemians, what you would build is a map of the city of my memory and my imagining. It's not literal. I don't claim it to be, you know, a scientific fact. And that's really, you know, the big difference between Joyce and me. He's there situating himself as the master builder, and I'm not at all.
This is fascinating. I'm now getting visions of Camden through your head, which I already had on reading the book, but it would be lovely to paint it or map it. And I'd quite like now to map Berlin as well through Brecht's house and the cafes, the two cafes. In Blue Self-Portrait, there's a very partial and very particular Berlin that the girl has lived sort of through her relationship. And it involves the toilets downstairs in a gallery and a cinema. And there are some very particular places, some very public and some very nondescript. It would be a very strange map of Berlin.
Oui, en fait, c'est d'abord un berlin de personnes qui n'ont pas de problème d'argent. Hein. Ils arrivent en avion, ces deux filles, se permettre d'arriver en plein milieu d'un opéra de Wagner sans avoir trop de problèmes avec leur le fait que le billet coûte cher.
So first and foremost, it's a book about. It's a Berlin for affluent people. For instance, they arrive on plane and then they have no difficulty going into the opera house to see a Wagner opera, bearing in mind that the ticket might be quite expensive.
Voilà, donc le billet, pour information, a coûté 275 euros. Donc voilà, je suis allée avec ma sœur. Moi, à cette époque-là, j'avais pas trop de problèmes d'argent encore. Et ma sœur en avait beaucoup plus, donc je lui avais payé son billet sur l'argent de mon ex-mari qui était très riche, qui est toujours très riche. Et donc moi d'arriver trois quarts d'heure en retard, ça n'avait aucune importance.
Just for information, the ticket was 275 euros, and when I went with my sister. At the time, I didn't have all that many money problems. She did, but I went with the money from my ex-husband, who had and still has a lot of money.
Voilà, et donc pour moi, la question était beaucoup plus une question musicale et une question de rapport à Wagner, c'est ça qui m'occupait, alors que ma sœur était très en colère qu'on arrive en retard.
And all that bothered me, all that interested me was the relationship with Wagner. That was the musical question that was important for me, whereas my sister was rather angry that we arrived late.
Donc tout ça pour dire que le livre, il est construit non pas sur une histoire, une lecture marxiste d'une promenade dans Berlin, mais sur le fait que dans des institutions culturelles généralement réservées à la bourgeoisie, ou disons en tout cas reconnues par la bourgeoisie, les endroits les plus intéressants sont les endroits qui sont ratés. Des endroits qui sont les moins importants, moins importants socialement, culturellement. Donc, par exemple, à la National Gallery, où il y avait une magnifique expo sur la mélancolie, qui était à Paris avant. Il s'agit de parler des toilettes et du fait qu'on n'ira pas voir cette exposition.
So it's no Marxist Berlin or vision of Berlin. The cultural institutions that were designed for, used by, and probably recognized better by the bourgeoisie are not the best places. The best places tend to be the lesser places, the failed places. For instance, the National Gallery, in which there was a wonderful exhibition on melancholy, which traveled around even to the UK. This is not the place. What is important is the toilets of the gallery and the very fact that the exhibition will not be visited.
Voilà, c'est une manière aussi d'être marxiste, hein, de dire que les choses importantes se passent pas forcément là où on croit.
It's a way of being a Marxist to show that the important stuff is not happening in the important places.
En tout cas, ce qu'il s'agit de dire, c'est que les significations dans la vie courante ne sont pas celles que la culture nous signifie, que la culture institutionnelle nous fait voir.
The meanings of real life are not what cultural institutions want us to them to be.
Excusez-moi de parler, oui, de dire ça dans ce lieu. Dire.
Sorry for saying this in such a place as this.
Thanks for listening to Unsound Methods. You can find us online at unsoundmethods.co.uk or on Twitter at unsoundmethods. You can find me and my writing at lachlanbloom.com or at lachlanbloom on Twitter.
You can find me on Twitter at Jamie Batchen, or my website is jamiebatchen.com. Thank you again for listening. We're going to continue to have a bit more of a break between the podcasts over the summer months, and as we head into autumn, we should be with you again in a month's time. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the rest of your summer.